So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 4, Chapter 6, Text Number 43. Vāmiva Bhagavanitācha Shiva Shakto Sarupaya Vishram Sri Jasi Pasha Atsi Kridanuruna Pato Jata Twam, you, Eva, certainly, Bhagavan, O my Lord, Etat, this, Shiva Shaktyo, being situated in your auspicious energy, Surupayo, by your personal expansion, Vishwam, this universe, Srijasi, create, Pasi, maintain, Atsi, annihilate, Kridan, working, Urunapata, spider's web, Jata, just like. Translation in purport by His Divine Grace, the Bhai Saranadavinda Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. My dear Lord, you create this cosmic manifestation, maintain it, and annihilate it by expansion of your personality. Exactly as a spider creates, maintains, and winds up its web. Please repeat. My dear Lord, you create this cosmic manifestation, maintain it, and annihilate it by expansion of your personality. Exactly as a spider creates, maintains, and winds up its web. In this verse, the word Shiva Shakti is significant. Shiva means auspicious, and Shakti means energy. There are many types of energies of the Supreme Lord, and all of them are auspicious. Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwara are called guna avatars, or incarnations of material qualities. In the material world, we compare these different incarnations from different angles of vision. But since all of them are expansions of the Supreme Consciousness, all of them are auspicious. Although sometimes we consider one quality of nature to be higher or lower than another. The mode of ignorance, or tamogun, is considered very much lower than the others. But in the higher sense, it is also auspicious. The example may be given herein that the government has both an educational department and a criminal department. An outsider may consider the criminal department inauspicious, but for the government's point of view, it is as important as the education department, and therefore the government finances both departments equally without discrimination. So example is given here of the creation, maintenance, and annihilation. It's like a spider. Prabhupada said the spider is the most perfect creature, insect, because it's self-sufficient. It creates its own, makes its own creation from its saliva, and it maintains it. And when it likes, it can wind up that same web back within. So it is completely sufficient and independent. So it's given an example here. The Supreme Personality of God is like that. He is sufficient. He can also perform all these different functions in creation and maintaining the different energy. And he does this. But he does it through various energies. Here, Prabhupada is saying the word Shiva Shakti is significant. The explanation is that Shiva is auspicious, and Shakti means energy. So because everything is coming from the auspicious Lord. Actually, nothing is inauspicious. If you see it in connection with the Lord, it attains its rightful status as the energy of the Lord being used in the Lord's service. So then it's auspicious, becomes auspicious. When it's disconnected from the Lord, then it becomes inauspicious. And therefore Krishna says, Manmana Baba Madbhag, always think of me, remember it. That's the most auspicious he can do. And forgetfulness of Krishna is the most inauspicious thing we can do, because it keeps us in the cycle of birth and death. So if we understand how the Lord is working through his different energies, we're always going to be in the presence of the Lord, because the energies are everywhere anyway. There's nothing in existence that we know that is the energy of the Lord. Krishna says, earth, water, fire, air, mind, intelligence, ahankara, these are my energies. That's what we're dealing with 24 hours a day. There's not a moment when we're not dealing with these eight energies of the Lord. So if we see everything in relation to Krishna, it's coming from Krishna, emanation from Krishna, it helps us to remember Krishna. So we don't actually see the energy, we see Krishna. We see our worshipful Lord. This is the training. First we can see the energy, and generally the first progression, we see the energy and we think, oh, it's mine to enjoy, so I'll enjoy the energy. Then we see it as connected to Krishna. Oh, it's connected to Krishna. Then we see Krishna. Prabhupada gives the example of the mother's cleaning the room, and she sees her daughter's slippers under the bed. She doesn't see the slippers, she sees her daughter, because she has affection for the daughter. So like that, the whole idea about purifying our consciousness is to awaken that affection for Krishna. So then when you see everything, you see it as your worshipful, your lovable Lord's energy. So you don't actually see the energy, you see your lovable object, your lovable, worshipful object. You see the Lord. So this is the training of Krishna consciousness. So then everything becomes auspicious. So again, energy. So Shiva Shakti means Shiva's energy. So then we understand Shiva's energy is Durga, Parvati, Sati. These are the different expansions of Shiva's energy. So this is what is acting, is Shiva's potency that we know as Durga Devi, who creates, maintains and annihilates the universe. Why Lord Shiva is being addressed here, my dear Lord, you create, maintain and the entire universe, whereas in Brahma Samhita and other places, Srishti, we understand it's Durga is doing all that, but he is saying Shiva is doing it. And other places it says Krishna does everything. All the time saying, Krishna, you maintain. Everybody who offers prayers to Krishna, you maintain, create and annihilate the universe. Here it's saying Shiva Shakti. So Shiva's actually doing it. He's addressing Shiva. You are doing all these. But how is he doing it? Through his energy. So this science of the energy and the energetic, the Shakti, Shaktiman, actually the Vaishnavas have the best understanding of this. This is the Achinta Veda Veda Tattva philosophy. Understanding that Krishna and his energies are actually non-different. We don't separate them. Many people separate the Lord and his energies. But the perfect conclusion is the philosophy that Mahaprabhu has given us. Achinta Veda Veda Tattva is simultaneously one and different from the Lord. So Shiva is creating, maintaining the entire universe, but he's actually not doing anything. He's meditating on Shankarshan or something like that. He's enjoying his own blissful nature, or the blissful nature of Shankarshan. But his wife carries on. She does all the work. She's doing all the housework. The universe is like a big house, so she's doing all the housework. So she's actually doing everything. But she's doing it in service to her husband, Lord Shiva. And she's doing it because he has a desire to do it. He has a desire to do it because Mahavishnu has a desire to do it. So to fulfill the desire of Mahavishnu, then the whole creation has become manifested. So simultaneously she's doing it, Shiva is doing everything, but simultaneously she's not, it's being done by his energy. Prabhupada gives the example of the Bila family. They always build the monuments and things, so they build a big monument hospital or whatever it is. And they say, Mr. Bila built it. You know, maybe he didn't go on site. But we say he built it. It was built by the labourers. They employed so many compass. Maybe, I don't know if Gammon did it or not. They're putting it together. They're making the construction. But we say it's Bila's building. Bila built it. Mr. Bila didn't build it. But we say that's a natural thing. We say like that. But he is the potent desire or the instigator of that. And by his potency, then it's being done through different energies. His construction company and his cement company. He's got Bila Cement. So he's engaged in this. It's all his energy. You can see it's his energy. He personally, he's not doing it, but it's his energy. It's happening by his desire. So a similar thing is happening here. Everything is happening by the desire of the Lord, and then it's being gradually delegated to different potencies to execute the function. Srila Prabhupada was taking a walk one time here in Mayapur, and he was saying, what's this, pointing out everything, and we don't know, Jayapataka knows that, and then what about this, oh yeah, Jayapataka, what about this construction, what about, oh Jayapataka Maharaj. He said, why Jayapataka knows everything? Jayapataka Maharaj is there. He said, it's not that you have to know everything and do everything. He said, delegate. You delegate certain people, certain areas, like that. That's how you do it. Not dependent on one person. So it was Prabhupada's desire to have this project. It was being continued by his energy in the form of his disciples. So it was delegated, he delegates his energy. So in this way we try to understand the Lord and interacting with his different energies. Prasha Shakti Vibhideva. Is that right? Prasha Shakti Vibhideva. The Lord has unlimited energies. So he exhibits them when it's necessary. So he says, you create, maintain the cosmic manifestation by expansion of your personality. By expansion of your personality, you do it. So we can say that Devi, Durga Devi, is doing everything in the material world. She's an expansion of Shiva. She's his potency, Shakti. And who is Shiva? He's the expansion of Vishnu. Vishnu's expanded himself into these Triguna avatars. Shiva, Brahma and Vishnu. For maintaining, so again, Vishnu is expanding. Expansion of his personality. So in one sense there's no difference between Krishna and everything else. Again, Chintavedavada Tattva. He's expanding everything through his different energies. So here we see Parvati is creation, maintenance and destruction. But actually Lord Shiva is doing it through her. But actually Vishnu is doing it by his desire through Shiva. And Vishnu is doing it by the desire of ultimately of Krishna, who says there is a need for a material world for the rebellious souls. So to create that material world, then there becomes a transformation of Krishna's energy. So Radha and Krishna, they are originally, they expand out into Vaikuntha as Lakshmi and Narayan. And then they expand into the material world as Shiva and Parvati. So it's originally it's Krishna. And everything is expanded from Hamsavasya Prabhupada. Everything expands through these different energies. Personally, Radha and Krishna are not here maintaining, creating the material universe. But they're doing it through different expansions of their personality. So, in other words, there's no difference between Lord Shiva and Parvati and Radha and Krishna. When Radha and Krishna, Krishna has to deal with the material world, he does so through Lord Shiva and Parvati. Prabhupada says, maybe seventh canto. Yeah, because Krishna doesn't touch the material energy. He's a Satchitananda, he doesn't touch material energy. But when he has to touch it, in the means of creation and annihilation and destruction, he does so in the form of Lord Shiva. So in other words, Krishna becomes Shiva for this particular type of work, for creation. In the spiritual world, he doesn't need... Or if somebody wants to worship Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, then Krishna expands out into Vaikuntha as Lakshmi, and Radharani expands as Lakshmi. So Lakshmi and Narayana are there. So Radha and Krishna are there to receive that particular, to perform that particular function. So similarly, when there's need of a creation, Radha and Krishna expand into Parvati and Shiva for this particular form of creation. They touch the material energy. That's why as Shiva, he's Vishnu, but he's a little bit with like yogurt and milk. He's a mixed. So he can deal with the material. That mixture means he can touch the material energy. That mixture is described in the Brahma Samhita. Purple. It's a portion of the deluding potency, Maya. It's a portion of the non-plentitude of the living entities. We are lacking so many things. We are lacking knowledge. A portion of that, and a portion of the ecstatic potency, ecstatic cognizant potency, which means the Haladini potency, small portion. So that's the adulterating principle that makes Vishnu become Shiva. Then he can deal with the material world, otherwise he doesn't touch it. So Lord Brahma has his vision. In yesterday's verse he says, I know you are the controller of the entire material manifestation. Although Lord Brahma was recently born, Shiva was born from Lord Brahma's eyebrows. But previous to that, Lord Shiva was there, setting the whole universe into action before Brahma started to do his role. So Lord Shiva is actually before Brahma, he's superior to Brahma. So Brahma's recognizing his position. And he said, I know you are the controller of the entire material energy, that's you, Shiva. And he's addressing him as a combination of father and mother of the cosmic manifestation. So he's having this vision. See, this creation is a husband and wife team. The Shakti is doing it. The energies of Shiva is doing it. He's doing it through his energies. Like the husband and wife, they cooperate together. So Lord Brahma is recognizing this. He's addressing Lord Shiva, but he's saying, you're doing this creation maintain as a combination of father and mother. So he has his vision. Brahma has his vision. But we can also see like that. If we can see the personalities behind it, it becomes very helpful. Because when we see material energy, if we're looking at it as an object of enjoyment, this is the cause of our bondage in the material world. If you see it as Mother Parvati, Shakti, then maybe we'll think twice about enjoying it. Because Shakti is for Lord Shiva's enjoyment. we may think twice. I want to take the position of Lord Shiva as the enjoyer of Parvati. So it helps us to think about it. And then start to respect Krishna's energies, the personality behind the energies. So it's this respectful attitude, and it's actually we have to learn to become submissive to the Lord's energies, recognizing that we are very, very tightly under the control of the Lord's energies. When we're in the material world, not for one moment are we out of the clutches of Maya. She's doing all the movement in the form of the three modes of material nature. Maya Devi is moving us around. We are actually not dependent for one second. We're always under her clutches and control. So it helps to learn to become submissive to the personality of the energies. Not submissive to Maya, Maya's dictation. So I should become submissive to Maya. Okay, she's dictating sense gratification, therefore I should have sense gratification. Not that kind of submissiveness. But submissiveness to understand that I'm completely dependent on you. You're pulling all the strings. You're the puppet master. I'm simply moving according to your direction. Chaiva Durga. Spiritual Durga is in the spiritual world. Her shadow energy becomes... Spiritual Durga is Yogamaya. Her shadow energy, Chaiva, the shadow is Mahamaya, becomes Mahamaya. So we can recognize the potency, how we're bound by Krishna's potency. This is his external potency. So the idea is we want to come under the clutches of the internal potency. That is Yogamaya potency. Oh, that is the potency that reveals Krishna. So we can see these potencies are non-different. Yogamaya expands as Mahamaya. So when we understand that personality of Mahamaya, how she's moving it, and become submissive to her, then we can become submissive to the internal potency. Without being submissive to the internal potency, there's no question of approaching Krishna. But it's imperative that we actually become submissive to the internal potency and approach her in a pure service attitude. That is the way we can approach Yogamaya, who controls all the spiritual movements. So without her blessing, then we can't approach the spiritual world. We can't approach Krishna because everything functions in that spiritual potency. So we should learn to become submissive. We have to admit we're submissive. We may not understand what is Yogamaya potency. We're out of touch. But we are in touch with the Maya potency, Mahamaya potency. We're very much in touch. It's very real for us. And we can understand quite easily, especially when we hear from Prabhupada, etc., that there, you know, birth, old age, disease and death, we have no say in the matter. We're forced to grow old, we're forced to become diseased, we're forced to die, we're forced to take birth. We have absolutely no say in the matter. And then everything in between that, it's all being arranged and forced. We are not independent whatsoever. So when we recognize our subordination to the potency of Krishna, and we want to put ourselves under the subordination of the internal potency. We've been under the subordination of the external potency since time immemorial. So now we have an opportunity to put ourselves under the protection of the internal potency. But under the protection and under guidance and dependent we must be. We never become independent. Either we're under the grips of Mahamaya or we're under the shelter of Yogamaya. So unless we become submissive and recognize how these potencies of Krishna are working, it'd be very slow. But when we do recognize these personalities, then we can actually serve with feeling and real appreciation, approach with real appreciation and a service attitude, that she may reveal Krishna, that the internal potency may reveal Krishna. So Lord Brahma has his vision. I know you well in that way, he's saying. I'm seeing you. It's a father and mother, you're the father and mother, you're maintaining, I see you like that. So he's actually the creator. Brahma is, takes on that function of creation. But here in his humility, he's actually seeing, actually Shiva is overall doing everything. And he's a secondary creator. Of course he understands Krishna does it. He's always offering Krishna prayers, the same prayers to Krishna. But here, because he has to appease Lord Shiva, he doesn't know what Lord Shiva's mood is, whether he's angry or not angry, so he's offering all these prayers, quite rightly, as he would offer to Vishnu or Krishna, calling him the supreme creator, maintainer and destroyer of the universe, which Lord Shiva is. And when they address Krishna as the creator of the universe, which everybody's addressing Krishna, he is a creator, but he does it in the form of Lord Shiva. Prabhupada says, when Krishna says, Aham Bijapati Pita, that I am the seed-giving father of the material world, Krishna is speaking that on the chariot, on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he's speaking to Arjuna. He said, I am the seed-giving father. This is like, he's the supreme speaker, the supreme absolute truth. But how? How is he the seed-giving father? In the form of Lord Shiva. Because he doesn't touch it. But he says it's me. Krishna understands it's me. In the form of Lord Shiva. Even Krishna doesn't make distinction. So, Achintaveda Vedatatya. Also, we see in when Krishna's teasing Rukmini, in that story of Krishna teasing Rukmini, and Krishna threatens to leave her, you should have married Shishupal, you're such a great king, things like that, I'm not worthy, I'm penniless, I'm a beggar, actually I'm not even a king, this is my father's, King Ugrasena should be having, but I'm kind of acting as a king. Anyway, he's teasing her, you know, this story in the Krishna. Anyway, Rukmini starts refuting all of his arguments. And in the last refutal, she says that, she said, the mode of passion is your energy. And when you passionately glance over me, I consider this the most auspicious time of my life. So here, Rukmini is the internal potency. Krishna only enjoys with his internal potency. But hearing this statement, Vishnu Chakrabarti Thakur says, here she's addressing herself as the material energy. And when Vishnu glances over the material energy, she says, I consider that the most auspicious time in my life. It's a conjugal pastime that Krishna says, it's a dream Vishnu's having, and he glances over. So she's saying, I consider that the most auspicious time in my life. So here, understanding how Durga Devi, the material energy, is a reflection from the spiritual potency, and that's our real identity. This is Srimanta Deep-lila. But here, Rukmini is reversing the same logic, that when you glance over me, I consider it the most auspicious time. That means she's identifying with material as Durga Devi. So this is the understanding. They're non-different. Even Rukmini is identifying herself as Durga. And when you glance over me with your mode of passion, which is your energy, when you glance over me, I consider it the most auspicious time of my life. So here we see the different functions of the different energies. How the energy and the energetic are actually non-different. And if we see them like that, then we can understand that Krishna is the fountainhead of all energies. He is our worshipful object. So then when the heart is clean, Premanjana Churita Bhakti Bilo Chanina, then you can see your worshipful Lord everywhere. You relate everything to your worshipful Lord. So this is touching the material energy. The spiritual energy, let's speak a little bit about Rath Yatra. We were supposed to speak something on this function of Rath Yatra. So Krishna is doing all this. He's creating, maintaining, and annihilating the material universe. It's a fact everybody understands. It's all being done by Krishna. But simultaneously, what's he doing in his own abode? He's doing something else also simultaneously. He's doing everything through his energies. He doesn't even have to bother. Everything is being done simultaneously through his energies. But he himself has his own pastime, where he doesn't have to expand a form to form that. What is his original pastime? So this is Vrindavan. This is Krishna's original pastime. His relationship with Srimati Radharani. This is the original feature of Krishna. He never expands to do that. That is him. That is him himself. This is the original feature of God, Krishna and Radharani. Any other feature, he may expand or expand his mood to become a friend, to become a parent, a son, like that. But that original form, Radha and Krishna, this is the original feature of Godhead. It doesn't need any expansion. So what does that original Krishna do? Then he performs his own wonderful pastimes for his pleasure. So this is what Mahaprabhu is showing us in Rath Yatra. This is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's not manifesting any form for this pastime, but he's enjoying these pastimes. And this expression of Lord Chaitanya has with Jagannath. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Radharani in the mood of Radharani, addressing Krishna on the chariot, and they're having this wonderful conversation and of their intimate pastimes. So this is all purely internal potency. There's no need for any other manifestation here. So this is the emotional state of God. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is also teaching us the essence of that is the Vipralamba Seva, the mood of separation that Mahaprabhu came to experience from Krishna. What my devotees are experiencing, especially when in separation. So he came to experience that and also to reveal it to others. So here we can understand the original emotions of God. Nobody knows what God is practically in the world, who he is, what he is, what he looks like. But we say he's a person. Right? Some people have a conception, yes, God is our Father in heaven, like that. Otherwise, here we get, what is the emotional state of God? What you can't even see, it's not his form or anything. What is his emotional state of his heart? This is what we're able to get when we understand the original personality of Godhead by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the chariot. So Mahaprabhu was speaking to Krishna. This is the time when there was a solar eclipse at Guru Ketra, and then all the residents of Vrindavan and all the Jadu dynasty, they go to, on the plea of taking a bath, they go to see Krishna at Guru Ketra. And so then Krishna, he meets the gopis there. After a while, he meets all the gopis. And so then Krishna's expressing his, Radharani is expressing her mood that you're the same Krishna. We understand you're the same Krishna. You're here before us. But here you're dressed like a king. And you've got all your soldiers with you and infantry. And we want you to come back to Vrindavan. Our actual relationship is that we're just lovers, that's all. You don't have any responsibility in Vrindavan except for looking after the cows. Our relationship, we're just lovers, that's all we are. But here, so please come back to Vrindavan with us. But here, it's hope against hope. Krishna's got 16,000 queens with him also, wives. She wants to take him back to Vrindavan so they can enjoy it. But he's got 16,000 wives with him. All of his armies and everything like that. So what possibility is there of Krishna coming? Very, very slim. It's a hope against hope. Still, this is her emotional state. It's not even separation because Krishna is there, but simultaneously is separation because he's the king Krishna. She wants to bring the original Krishna back to Vrindavan. So this is, she's expressing this emotional state. It's a very delicate situation. And because practically there's no chance she'll come back. But here's a lovable object before her. But still he won't come back. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he wrote something that I'd like to do my bhajan in Kurukshetra. So the disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, why did he write that? I want to do bhajan in Kurukshetra. Everybody wants to do bhajan in Vrindavan or Mayapur. Why Kurukshetra? It's a battlefield. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explained, no, he said, Bhaktivinoda Thakur had that desire to serve Srimati Radharani in that situation, knowing the delicate situation of her heart and her emotional state. Well, it's very unlikely Krishna will come back. We're trying, but it may be a slim chance, practically impossible. This is her emotional state, but we want Krishna to come back. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was saying, if I'm there doing service to Srimati Radharani, whatever she needs, while her heart's in such a delicate state, she will certainly be very pleased and bless me. And this way I can achieve the favor and savor of Srimati Radharani. So this is why he wanted to be in Kurukshetra, because he thought that service rendered at that time would be so pleasing to Radharani and help her in her emotional state there. So that same mood is expressed here in Vidyanaga at Vyaspati's house. Who was it? The teacher there. Dimapu was teaching? Vyaspati's house. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas, he left, then he came back to Mayapur, Navadvip, on the way to Shantipur. So he stopped at Vyaspati's house and he actually gave darshan to all the devotees. He went up on the roof and there were millions and millions of devotees. Mahaprabhu has come back. All rushed. You can read that description in Chaitanya-tamrita. Millions of people rushed to see him. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur is expressing that in the Navadvipavatranga. And he said, whoa, when will I see that king of sannyasis on the rooftop? Because he went on the roof of the Vyaspati's house and gave a darshan. When will I see that king of sannyasis there? And he said he's effulgent and he's got his sannyas veshon. And he said, you are my lord, you are the same lord I worship. But still, see you in this sannyas dress, my heart longs to take you back to Srivasangam on the banks of Alal Digi, where you had your long curling hair and your dhoti folded three times, and we're always engaged with your devotees. My heart longs to take you there. He said, just as the gopis, when they met Krishna at Kurukshetra, it was their lovable object, but he was a king. Here he is a king. But still they're longing to take him back to Vrindavan. So Bhaktivinoda equates that here. You're my same Lord Mahaprabhu, but my heart longs to take you back to Shiva Sangam. Of course Mahaprabhu never leaves Vrindavan and he never takes sannyas in Vrindavan. He stays here in his youthful with his hair and his beautiful dhotis. He never actually leaves. But this is how they want to serve the Lord in his... Because this is the Lord's pleasure pastime. The devotee wants to please the Lord. He doesn't want to make him take sannyas as the last thing or leave Vrindavan. This is the last thing. The devotee wants to serve him. That's Krishna's pleasure. So they're trying to assist Krishna in this. And so here they're revealing that mood of separation. It's very, very deep understanding that Mahaprabhu is revealing. It's very uncommon and very difficult to comprehend unless you actually attain that spiritual understanding. But we can see the intensity, we can study at least the intensity of this, we're speaking of separation, how it's greater than sambhoga, relationship. There's a meeting and separation. Everybody talks about love and they think that's the combination, that's the greatest thing. But here separation becomes a greater aspect of that love. The same loving feeling is there, but there's something in between. So it increases that love. Someone was telling me that it was a comment. They were discussing love. what poets write of love, about love. It's never a husband and wife. There's never any romantic story and a husband and wife in their house. Never. He said it's always a situation. The best love stories, it's when there's some impediment in between the boy and girl. Romeo and Juliet. There was a great impediment there. He said this is what the poets call love. They never call love a married man. Then you're completely free. You love a woman, you marry her, 24 hours a day, you can do exactly what you want, fulfill all your heart's desires. But it's not love. They never speak of that as love. Only when there's an impediment, something is stopping you reaching your love, then that enhances that love so much more, that separation. So this is what is being expressed. And we see, just like we're hearing about Gadadhara's Pandit yesterday, because he's Haladini potency, he is Radharani's pleasure potency, that is his existence. So when Mahaprabhu, he's following Mahaprabhu, he can't bear separation. It's a separation, also that pastime. He can't bear separation, Mahaprabhu leaving Puri. And Mahaprabhu preaches to him, you should go back, keep your vows, or get your sannyas and everything like that. Then he says to him, Gadadhara Pandit, he said, this is simply sense gratification. Whose pleasure are you thinking of, mine or yours? He was asking this question to the pleasure potency of Krishna. Her business is Krishna's pleasure. He's asking her, whose pleasure are you thinking of, yours or mine? She couldn't answer. She had to faint. It was she's Krishna's pleasure potency. What can she do? He just fainted. Yeah, there was no answer. But the idea is, she's Krishna's pleasure potency. Mahaprabhu told her to go back. It's not pleasing if you come with me. Now, Gadadhara Pandit, Haladini potency, Srimata Radharani, she was willing to sacrifice her existence as the pleasure potency of Krishna because of this separation. She was meant to give Krishna pleasure. Mahaprabhu said, go back. You'll bring me pleasure if you go back, not if you come with me. She was willing to sacrifice her entire existence as pleasure potency due to that strong feeling of separation. And you see also the gopis, when Krishna called them for the dancing program, and they all came at night, then he very politely said, oh, you come out to see the nice scenery in the forest? What are you doing? Please sit down. Tell me why you've come here. He was being very official and polite with them, and he was teasing them with his words. They liked it at first because anything he does is good. But then they thought maybe he's serious. Maybe he is serious. He's saying, why don't you go back home? Because it's not good for you to be out. Many dangerous animals in the night time. Your husband's maybe worried, and your parents and like that. So better you go home. And there was they didn't know what to say. They just looked down on the ground and they were drawing lines with their toes on the ground and they were shedding tears, washing their mascara and their kumkum, and they were very hurt actually. The Prabhupada said they were grievously wounded. But finally they could muster up a little bit of gravity and speak to Krishna. And they said, Krishna, it's not proper for you to treat us like this. They said, you may be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but still it's not proper for you. We have surrendered everything. We have sacrificed everything to satisfy it. You may be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but it's not proper for you to do this. Now this is a rasa bas. This is Krishna, Rasleela. This is the essence of Krishna's pastimes. And Krishna's the son of Nanda, and these are married women. They shouldn't be together. It's very, very secretive. And so to bring in, oh, you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you can do exactly as you like, then where is Krishna's parakiya ras? That is the essence of Krishna's manifested pastime. How he can exhibit that parakiya ras? When they're spoiling it. This is rasabhas. Krishna's called them to dance the rasleela. And they're saying, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and you can do as you like. So we see here that due to this feeling of impending separation, they would do anything, even sacrifice the so-called rasapas, contradiction of mellows. By bringing out this point that you're the Supreme Person, they were willing to sacrifice the whole mood that they, their boys and girls, they shouldn't be together. Krishna sits an ordinary boy, he's the son of Nanda, they're ordinary girls, they're cowherd girls, they shouldn't be doing this. This is what Krishna's enjoying, this Parikya Ras, that excitement, the devilment of it. Krishna's very much fond of this. And they're spoiling it by telling, no, you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna doesn't want to know that. But because of the impending separation, they were even able to sacrifice. Anything can be said. So this is actually showing the supreme position of this separation from Krishna, the Vipralamba Seva. So this is what Mahaprabhu was enjoying and also preaching. We don't have time to read from it, but anyway, you can read Shaitatamrita. Mahaprabhu is speaking as Radharani to Krishna. It's really, really nice in the Madhya Leela chapter 13. Shrima Bhagatam ki Jagannath Balaram Sabaj Maharani ki Ratyatra Mahotsava ki Nitaigo Premanandi.
You're talking about how people sacrifice for Krishna, and since I've been in Mayapur, I've met a lot of residents here that have sacrificed their lives to Guru and Krishna, to the Dham, and they have seems like a sort of a lonely hearts club sometimes. It's filled with people that are had shattered relationships, families, poverty stricken, and all kinds of problems that they could have spent years dedicating their lives to solving those problems and working those in, you know, making things happen so they don't end up in these sort of miserable or seemingly miserable situations. So how is it that someone who's given themselves to Krishna would end up with so many seem to be the loser in so many ways?
Mainly due to his lack of faith in Krishna, his lack of dependence on Krishna. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, we're a little bit proud of our own abilities to achieve things instead of depending on Krishna. Then we start to identify, when we identify ourselves as being able to do something, generally we identify ourselves as the doer. And so if it's a good result, we identify ourselves with the enjoyer. And if it's a bad result, we identify ourselves as the sufferer. So if we learn to become dependent on Krishna, then it becomes easier. But suffering must be there. Devotee, non-devotee, everyone. So it's a miserable world. Krishna states again and again in the Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada said you've got to make the best use of a bad bargain. So don't try to put too much energy into solving problems in the material world. That's a losing game. You just get caught up with it, and it's all problem. You have to give more time to the positive aspect of Krishna consciousness. I die, you die. Our love's going to be finished. It's going to happen. The material world is like that. It's going to happen. It's full of mysteries and calamities. So we shouldn't be too concerned about trying to solve the calamities, because it's been going on since time immemorial. It'll go on since for immemorial time. Nobody's ever solved the problem, and that's all the people are doing. They're trying, that's all they do, to try and solve. Nobody's ever done it. The Prabhupada said, don't waste your time trying to solve problems in the material world. Spend that trying to become Krishna conscious. See Krishna in everything. See Krishna's hand in everything.
You're talking about how Krishna never touches the material world, and Lord Shiva is actually the master and the controller of the material world, and then you were talking about all the different expansions. You know, Krishna expands in Balaram, then Balaram expands and expands and expands and expands. So sometimes when I hear these kinds of descriptions, I wonder if there's ever a breakdown in communication as the expansions goes on. It worries me a little bit. In other words, I mean, I know it sounds foolish, but when we're praying to Krishna here in the material world, is it Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan who's hearing us? If we're praying to Krishna, we say, oh, dear Krishna, could you please help me in this way? Or, dear Krishna, please. Is it Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan who's hearing us? Or is it the super soul inside and it gets communicated up the chain of command, or does he hear us at all? Because he's so far away and he's out of touch with the material world and he's totally absorbed in Ladini Shakti. So these are the doubts that kind of come into my mind. I wonder if you could address them.
Yeah, now Krishna will hear you according to your own realization. So as you say, he definitely hears a super soul because that's his official duty, is to hear us and fulfill our desires. So definitely he hears us that. But on a more devotional level, then he's here like as the deity. He can pray in the form of the deity. He's come to receive those prayers. If it's a material prayer, then the actual transaction will be done through Shiva and Parvati. If it's done in all reverence, then Radha and Krishna reciprocate as Lakshmi and Narayana. If it's done with pure love for Radha and Krishna, then that is direct. That will be direct. The energy never, it never, what did he say? What did he say? The energy never, there's never a breakdown in communication in Krishna's energies. See, even the material and the Maya energy, that's also Ompunam Madhapunam. That's just the material energy, and that's so perfect. And the proof is that we've never ever seen for 1 second when Maya stopped. You've never actually caught the hand of Maya or see the hand of Maya. She never stops. She's relentless. And she's just a material potency. No, you never get a break. Maya can never give a hair's breadth break. Never get a break. She's doing her job service so nicely for Krishna. So that's just the material energy. So what does it speak of the spiritual energy? Of course, if Krishna breaks down, then one time he fainted and everybody thought that Vrindavan started to faint. He saw his beauty in the reflection and he was a beautiful person. He fainted. Then everybody started fainting. And all the trees and everything was fainting. Balaram's soul was happening. Hey, wake up, Krishna. Everything had to come to life again. Om Purnam Adha Purnam. No, it's perfect. His arrangement is perfect.
Understand the material creation. My point, how Krishna glances over the unmanifest pradhan, that splits into the three modes of material nature, and then from the modes of material nature, mind, intelligence, and false ego are born. So, a couple of questions: how exactly does the pradhan manifest? How exactly does it exist? Where does it exist? How do we conceive of it? And my second question about the modes of material nature, like can we think of them as separate from consciousness? Because we have mind, intelligence and false ego of which to contemplate the modes of material nature. So what are the modes of material nature in themselves? I'm not sure I completely understand.
Maybe
a bit closer. Yeah. And then from intelligence manifests passion. From passion manifests intelligence, sorry. So do we speak of that intelligence as like a universal intelligence, or is it just a singular intelligence, just for the individual jiva? Because the jiva is implanted into the material nature, so does that intelligence then manifest in just that singular individual intelligence? So it's just a few questions.
See, the jiva has its own intelligence, mind, and identity anyway. When he comes into the material world, these different potencies enter into him. Mind, intelligence, ego enter into the jiva. And then he's acting, he's identifying through the false ego as the mind, intelligence, body, senses, etc. So then he takes advantage of the material mind, material intelligence, material senses to act. His original pure ones are covered. But now all of his attention is in the material body and material senses. So he's using all the material senses. Krishna says these are my material elements, earth, water, fire, air, mind, intelligence, they're material. So he's utilizing them, he's identifying, he's working through these senses. When he becomes pure, he doesn't need that material mind, material senses, and intelligence anymore. Then that just goes back into the pradhan, into the stock mind, stock intelligence, stock. He doesn't need it, because at that time everything will come directly from the soul. The intelligence and the mind are actually in the heart, so the thinking, feeling, willing function will start to coming from the heart. So he doesn't need to take advantage of the material mind and senses, so it just dissolves, goes back into the total mind, total intelligence.
If my memory is completely correct about it, is it from ignorance the mind manifests, and from goodness false ego manifest? Is that correct?
Yeah. No, firstly, false ego manifests. False ego in mode of goodness produces the mind. The false ego in the mode of passion produces the intelligence.
The physical elements, they manifest from the subtle elements. So, it's from space manifests from false ego. Am I correct?
No. Space comes after. Sound is the first.
So Radha and Krishna in this virtual world, we sort of feel that's some sort of parakeya perfection. It's presented in Goloka Vrindavan, but then we find out that Krishna, he also has another relationship with Viraja Gopi in the form of not in the form of Tulsi Devi, but that's how the Tulsi pastime manifests. So how does that is that just extending the obstacles? Is that Srimati Radharani extending the obstacle, or what? How does that work?
So that's parakeya rasa also.
Yes.
With Viraja. Yeah? That's also parakeya rasa.
It almost seems to be like has more potency than Radharani's relationship with Krishna. Is that because he's an expansion of Radharani, or what?
No, she has. What's the verse? Brahma Smriti Ananda Chinmaya Rasa Pavita Pita Bija Ivin Jarupa Thaya Kalabi Goloka Ivin Ivasatya Kilatma Bhutto Govinda Madhi Krishna. Now Radharani expands into unlimited gopis. They're all pleasure potency, varying degrees and varieties of pleasure potency. So Krishna can enjoy whatever Krishna's mood is, he can taste. So they're all engaged in parakeya rasa. So Chandravali, sometimes she's able to capture Krishna away. It's a conjugal relationship, it's a parakeya rasa. Sometimes she appears that she's waylaid Krishna, and hundreds and thousands of other gopis also. It's not the only Radharani, she's not the only enjoyer of Krishna. She is in that aspect because she expands as all the hundreds of millions of gopis. But she expands for Krishna's pleasure. Then when Krishna has a relationship in front of Radharani with someone, she becomes angry and jealous, but it's actually her expansion. But to taste these different flavors, then she expands unlimitedly. Krishna's famous as a, like the bee goes from, gets a little bit of nectar from each flower, so that is Krishna, he's famous for it. So she's not possessive. Okay, she is in every way, she's superior to everyone, and always will be, but it's not that she's thinking, well, Krishna, it's only me, but she expands unlimitedly. So whatever Krishna's feeling, mood is feeling, there's some gopi who has that quality, who has that thing that can attract that and fulfill that desire of Krishna. It's all Radharani, but simultaneously she also goes along and plays the mood of being angry or being jealous, and as if it wasn't her. But everything she does is actually for his pleasure. So even her anger and jealousy, and it's all for her. It all comes for Krishna's pleasure.
Is that like a reason why we don't put Tulsi on Radharani's feet? Is that the reason we don't put Tulsi Devi on Srimati Radharani's feet? Because it's she's a...
Well, that's one reason. She's not necessary. Radharani, Tulsi is her expansion, so she's there anyway. So Kushi Shakti Tattva also, then generally the Tulsi is reserved for Vishnu Tattva. But she's there in Radharan, Tulsi is there in Radharan anyway. Jai Jagannath Swami ki Jai Prabhupada ki Jai Shamanagas Prabhu ki Jai Jai Go Premanandi. There you go.